Hi, I'm Alicia.
And I'm Robin, and you're listening to Bowel Moments,
the podcast sharing real talk about the realities of IBD. Served on the rocks. This week, we bring back friend of the show and former guest, Hannah Kramer. I interview Hannah and Robin about their experiences utilizing eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, otherwise known as EMDR. EMDR is a psychotherapy technique that was originally designed to alleviate the distress associated with traumatic memories, and Hannah and Robin have both been using it with their therapist. So I talked to them about what this has been like, how their therapist introduced this to them, and any pros and cons that they see for people who are looking at utilizing this for their own medical trauma. If you want to hear more about Hannah's story, go back to episode 13. And if you want to know even more about EMDR from a therapist who uses this, go to episode 33. You'll find those in the show notes. Cheers.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Bowel Moments. This is Robin.
Hey, guys. This is Alicia. And we are so happy to bring our delightful, wonderful, lovable friend, Hannah Kramer, back to the show. Hannah, welcome back.
Thank you. Hello.
We brought you back for a very specific reason, but of course, it wouldn't be our show if we didn't ask you what you're drinking.
Thank you so much for asking. I'm drinking sparkling water with fresh raspberries in it.
Oh, yum. That sounds lovely. Robin, what about you?
I am also drinking sparkling water with lime juice. I was thinking blueberries because I do have blueberries, but I went with the safe lime juice.
Well, I would just like to point out that I'm also drinking sparkling water. It just happens to be mixed with alcohol. And it is a Topo Chico hard seltzer. Yummy. And this one is strawberry guava. So cheers, guys.
Cheers.
All right. Normally, our next question would be, tell us your IBD story. But Hannah, you have a whole episode that talks about your IBD story. So I definitely would tell people to go back and listen to Hannah's episode because it is as awesome as she is. However, the reason we brought you back is to talk about eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. So for folks that don't know what this is, it is a psychological technique used by specially trained therapists to help with processing trauma. And so again, trained therapists. We do a really great deep dive on this with a therapist named Courtney Robert. It looks like Robert, but she's Cajun, so it's Robert. And that was episode number 33 back in September of 2022. So definitely go back and listen to that if you want the deep dive and like the talking through exactly how this works. But the very cool thing is both Robin and Hannah have been doing this with their therapist. And we thought since we did a deep dive and it's been coming up in a couple of episodes with folks that we would invite Hannah to come back and that you and Robin would really talk about your experiences using this technique. So I've said a lot of things now. So let's start by talking about how did you guys decide you wanted to do this? And then did you have therapists already that were trained in this or did you have to seek somebody out specially? So Hannah, let's start with you. How did you decide you wanted to do this?
I had heard about EMDR before my medical shit show of 2021, 2022, 2023, or it ended before 2023. But I, you know, had other things going on. And then when everything was going really badly, a friend said, hey, you know, have you heard about EMDR? And my therapist also said, have you heard about EMDR? And so I was kind of just desperate to do anything. I needed to have my reversal. And at the time, I still had my ostomy. And I knew that I had to have a reversal, but I thought there's no way that I can go through that again, or I'm not consenting to that. So I did EMDR in order to prepare myself to have the surgery again after having so much medical trauma. And I got really lucky because the person who I've actually had the same therapist since I was 15 years old. So she's been my therapist since before I was diagnosed, when I got diagnosed, and then all the highs and lows since then. And she is also certified to do EMDR. And thanks to COVID, she had been doing EMDR virtually for about a year and a half by the time that I needed it. And so she was willing to do it virtually with me because she's back in my hometown. So I did it virtually with her.
That's very cool. I guess I didn't realize it could be done virtually, but it does make sense. So that's so cool. Such good information. Robin, what about you? How did you decide to do this and how was it presented to you?
So I also knew about EMDR. I read about it. Is it in the book, The Body Keeps Score?
Yes.
They talk about it a lot. And it's also a treatment used for veterans to treat PTSD. So I was familiar with it in that sense, but not in the sense to treat medical trauma. And my therapist also, I was able to do it virtually. I had not even considered it as an option for me. I didn't think that I needed it, but I kept coming back to this one thing in therapy that I couldn't get past. And it just kept being a reoccurring issue. And one day my therapist said, "Have you thought about EMDR? I think that that might help you with this issue." And that's all it took for me to say yes. When I started therapy, so I didn't do therapy my whole life. I just started doing therapy. Like everybody, if you listen to the show, you've pretty much listened to my entire therapy experience because I've gone through it real time recording this show. So I have been with that therapist for a year and a half now, I guess, maybe close to 2 years, because 2021 is when I started seeing a therapist after my surgery. After, oh my gosh, 2 years. This show, you guys really have been through my therapy journey with me. So,
do you get your therapist like anniversary presents?
I don't know, but I feel like I should now.
I've sent my therapist, like when I graduated undergrad, when I graduated law school, I sent her the notification or the invitation because I felt like part of it was due to her. The credit was due to her.
Sweet.
For sure.
I'm sure that meant a lot to her. She's like, "Hey, thanks.
You got me here. Thank you for keeping me mentally sound." One of the things that I decided when I started therapy was I was going to be willing to try anything, like be open to it, just be fully committed to it, because I felt like I'd be wasting my time if I wasn't willing to actually just try it, to like fully be in the moment and try whatever we were going to do. So when she suggested it, I said, "Okay, what do we have to do? Let's do it."
Okay. So from a patient perspective, you guys decide, all right, we're going to try this. How does it start? Like, what is the first thing you do with your therapist when they're talking to you about EMDR? Like, okay, you're like, "Okay, I'm in it. I'm ready for EMDR. Now what happens?"
The first thing I did was I had to come up with a safe place, a safe space visually. And she asked me, "Where are you most comfortable?" And then visualize that. And what do you see? What do you smell? How do you feel? And so for me, I was picturing like laying on the couch with a eucalyptus candle burning. And so she had me really nailed down on that safe space. And then we had to go through the trauma. Because basically what you have to do is talk about the awful thing that happened to you in order to process it. I think I don't know if this is unique, but it felt unique that I was going to have that traumatic experience again. So it wasn't like, you know, this really bad thing happened to me and, you know, statistically it can't happen again. And so like, let's, you know, convince yourself that it can't happen again. I knew that I was going to go back and have surgery. I knew it was going to be a risky surgery. So I couldn't, you know, we couldn't with a straight face say, you know, this is in the past. It wasn't. And so it was processing what happened in order to prepare me to go through it again. And so that's where she has you, you know, picture that awful moment that you keep going back to, like Robin mentioned. And then from when you keep going back to it, you realize that there's some patterns. So like for me, I was able to realize that the patterns for me was anything where I don't have control and anything where I don't feel good was a trigger for my trauma. And then you get to go back to that like a million times. And throughout it, even throughout like a 1 hour session, I don't know how to say it, like a highs and lows. So you continue, you get really disturbed and then your disturbance level goes down. And then maybe you'll feel more disturbed by the trauma and then it goes down. And so it's really an intense hour. I don't know, Robin, is that kind of how your therapist did it?
Yeah. I mean, the first session after we decided to do it, we did the same thing, established the safe space. I actually took time between sessions too, to practice, like taking that trauma and putting it away into my safe space. So I didn't revisit it in between sessions. Like I only revisited that trauma while we were in session. You know, that was really important for me to not like dwell on it in between, that I was training my mind to not think about it all the time. But for me, I didn't know what the thing was. I knew there was something there that was holding me up. So unlike you, like it was surgery. I didn't know what it was. There was something there that was keeping me from doing something. And so it took a full session for us to get down to the memory that was actually the thing, which was wild to me because the memory that it ended up being is not something that I would have thought that it was. Like the memory that we ended up digging down to was holy, I remember it so vividly. I was taking my daughter Logan to New York with two of her friends for her 21st birthday. And this was like my lowest point when I realized like, I am full on flaring again. This is definitely, I have to have Crohn's. Like I've been going back and forth to the doctor. My diagnosis hadn't changed yet. But I knew something was wrong. I knew something was wrong. And I had gotten there a day early. And I was laying on a sofa bed, my mom's friend, because I was staying at their house for the night. They lived on Staten Island and they wanted to go out to dinner and I couldn't go. And I couldn't move and I couldn't sleep because I'm in so much pain and I couldn't take anything. And I was miserable. And when that memory was the memory that I finally got down to, I was so surprised that that's where I landed. Like I did not expect it that to be the thing. Like I just didn't. And so just revisiting that and living in that space was, gosh, it was really hard. And it was very intense having to go back to that. And while I knew I wasn't going to relive that moment again, I mean, the unpredictability of living with chronic illness. I mean, just because I feel good right now.
Right. 2 hours from now could be a different story. I mean, I hope you feel good 2 hours from now.
Right. Right. But it's, it feels like I don't like to compare, but having to actually do this to be able to even go through surgery again. Like I did have a panic attack when they were prepping me for surgery. Like the nurse was there, like holding my hand and just holding it down until they gave me something to calm me down, mm-hmm. you know, before they could actually give me the meds to put me under, because I was like, I'm about to spiral, sir. I'm about to spiral.
I think it's reassuring to know though, that your therapist helps you figure out how to handle this, especially because like you said, in your case, Robin, I think you've said to me that like, you didn't resolve it in one session, that sometimes with EMDR, it really does work that quickly that you can resolve it in one session. And in your case, that didn't happen, but that your therapist was able to help you say, okay, I'm going to help you box this up and just put it away for a little bit. And we're going to come back to it. It's not like we're going to ignore it forever, because frankly, that's what I would want to do, is just like pack that shit up real tight. Let's not talk about it anymore. But your therapist is like, we're going to revisit. So just put it in a little box, tuck it away. And then we bring it back out again when we're ready and you're ready. And so it gives you a little break in between and that you can come back to it, because you said this is intense. And so, right. Yeah. You want to be able to help. So your therapist will help you. So everybody that's considering this, yes, this sounds really intense and hard, but you have somebody guiding you and helping you.
How many sessions did you do, Hannah?
It's still ongoing. All right. I do them every once in a while just because my medical luck hasn't gotten that much better. But I think I did maybe 4 to 5 sessions and I felt like healed. It was crazy. And I talked about this last time I was on the podcast, that I was going to the ER once a week. And, you know, I kind of joked about it when I was on the podcast at that time, because I thought it was funny. But, you know, I was showing up to the ER and they ran labs. And the only thing that came up with it was that I was dehydrated. They'd give me a bag of fluids. Maybe I got lucky and got some Dilaudid if my head hurt. And then they'd send me on my way. And what I realized during EMDR was that the only place I felt safe was at the hospital. And so I would just take myself to the hospital and I was not dehydrated. I mean, maybe I was dehydrated, but I was actually having a panic attack and just nobody at the hospital realized that. And so, you know, in working through the 4 to 5 sessions, I stopped going to the ER, except for, you know, there was one time where I went and I actually needed to be there because I had another complication, but it really helped me work through that. And we did weekly. So the 4 to 5 sessions was over a month period. So I was seeing results, even though we did, you know, more than a month's worth, I saw results after maybe 2 or 3 weeks, because I just had such a new awareness of what was actually happening.
I agree. I did 4 sessions for this total. And I saw results after 2 sessions, I saw like improvement. And after the 4th session, I was like, what else? What's the next thing that we're going to do? What's the next memory we're going to attack? I can't do it right now because I'm traveling a lot for work. You really need to do it like on a regular basis. If you want to, you can't like do it and then skip a few weeks and then do it again. You really need to do it at least weekly.
I mean, I would imagine that memory is like a little like living thing. When you put it in the box, it doesn't want to stay there. Once you've addressed it, it doesn't want to stay in the box. So you got to make sure you bring it back again.
It's not that it's hard. I mean, it is hard and intense, but it's really worth it. And I think it has so many benefits, but it's also not the type of thing that you could just kind of sit in your car. Like I know when I've done telehealth therapy, if I was working, sometimes I would just talk to my therapist for 50 minutes from my car and then go inside. This is, I mean, there's some physical things you have to do, either tapping or with your eyes, but also it's just the nature of it is intense because it has to bring you to the dark place. And so for me, I would do it and then I would maybe drive into the office. So I had 20, 30 minutes to decompress from it because it's not the type of thing where you get off that call and hop right into another call. At least it wasn't for me.
No, I took a nap after, honestly. Sometimes I do therapy over lunch and I would schedule extra time after so I could take, like, my brain needed to rest afterwards. I had to decompress after that. It was intense. Yeah. And I did it virtually and I had to do the tapping, the actual tapping. So it was wild though, because you are aware of your brain making these connections and actually changing. Like, I mean, I know it doesn't work for everyone. I know that it doesn't work for everyone. I feel like you do have to go into it, like totally being open to the possibility of change. And you do have to go into it with the mindset that you do have to actually be able to compartmentalize, right? You have to be able to take this thought when you're done with the session and put it away and not think about it, because you have to train yourself to be able to do that. But it was wild. It felt like I was watching it happen. It was wild. Did you feel that way too?
Yeah, it was wild. The thing was, I knew that I was anxious about having another surgery and I knew that all these complications had happened. So it made sense why I was anxious, but I didn't know the exact reason. I couldn't, on my own, I wouldn't have been able to pinpoint, oh, the trauma is going back to this exact minute where I was sitting right here and this person said this. But I was able to do that within the first session. And it was so crazy to me that my subconscious, it was that easy for my subconscious to release it just from doing a few taps. But yeah, I mean, it happens really quickly too.
I would also say this is not something that you're just going to do yourself, like sitting there by yourself, tapping and—
No, don't do it by yourself.
Please don't. And this is like, you need a trained therapist to guide you through this. It's not something that you can just, do on your own. Please don't do that.
So since you said it, I did try one time because I was having a panic attack and I thought, when I do it with my therapist, it's so helpful. And it was not, the tapping by myself, because, she's probably timing it and she's talking you through it. That didn't happen. So I did try and do it by myself and it did not do anything.
Do it by yourself.
And again, we recognize the privilege in the statement of go get yourself a trained therapist. So just everyone, we understand that this is not accessible and that's a problem. And we will continue to fight for it to be accessible to everybody. So it's interesting because the things that you guys have talked about are not necessarily things that you in your brain had identified as the trauma with a big T, trauma. I mean, I'm curious, it sounds like your therapists were the ones that worked with you for a little bit and just kind of regular talk therapy, CBT, the kind of typical modalities that are used in a lot of cases. And then they helped you identify that there's something in there that's sticking everything up. I'm curious is like how, if somebody doesn't know that this is trauma, how did they identify that this is something they want to try? Like, did you at least have an inkling because you'd read about it? Or was it that your therapist is like, oh girl, like, okay, Robin's nodding.
For me, it was the oh girl. Like I said, there just was this reoccurring thing that a theme, right, that I kept coming back to that I couldn't get past. And I can't even tell you what that, like, it wasn't like something that was conscious to me, but it was something that my therapist recognized whatever in her notes. And she was like, this is something that is a hang up for you.
Got it. So it wasn't like you were like, I can never go to Long Island or whatever. No, where were you? Staten Island. I can never go to Staten Island again.
Right. No, okay. It wasn't like that.
Well, that's how mine was, is I was like, I'm not having this surgery. In my situation, I had to have a reversal. I got the ostomy, in an emergency situation. So cosmetically, it was not done to last me forever. So I had to go back into surgery, but I was not willing to. But it is interesting because it sounds like Robin and I both did EMDR with someone who we also did talk therapy with. Is that so? But that is actually not usually the case. When my therapist had said, you know, I think you need to do some trauma therapy, EMDR, and I had a few friends say it too. And I also was starting to realize that there was a pattern with me going to the ER every week that wasn't funny anymore. She said, you know, I can find you somebody in San Antonio because she doesn't live in the same city as me. And I said, you know, you know my history. You've been my therapist for so long. You know my Crohn's journey. You know all my surgeries. I don't want to have to explain that to someone again. And she said that that's not the case for EMDR, that EMDR is not talk therapy, that the person doesn't need to know you and know your, no, I mean, I guess they have to know you to a certain extent, but she said that normally it's not the same person that does the EMDR and the talk therapy. I just ended up doing that because it was someone I was comfortable with. And also we ended up just scheduling it as if we like by regularly scheduled therapy sessions. So I was able to just kind of start it sooner.
That's what we did too. That is one thing that I wasn't interested in, changing therapists. It took me a while to find her. And so, I mean, we talked about that on the show, like finding a therapist sometimes is like dating, you have to find the right one. And it did take me a couple of therapists to find her. And so she was trained in it. And I wasn't interested in having to go through that process again. So
that's how I felt too. And I did ask my therapist, I said, you know, if you and I do it, if I do it with you, it has to be virtual. If you find me someone in San Antonio, I could do it in person. Do you think that it's more effective one way or the other? And because I started doing it in 2022, it was during COVID. So she had actually done a lot of virtual EMDR. So she said that it was still as effective as if I was in person.
I can understand why you guys wanted to go with the person that you had gotten to know and trusted, especially because this is a very, very vulnerable moment of like having to go through such a difficult, again, trauma with a big T, you know? And so I don't know that I'd just be like, cool, I'll go see this guy over here. You know, like that would be hard for me, but it's good to know that even if you don't have that deep relationship with that person, that it's still effective and it's still somebody that, you know, will be able to help you. So it's kind of good and bad. Like I can see both sides of it. Like I personally would probably want to work with a person who I had more of a relationship with just because it feels a little less scary, but it's nice to know I could just go and talk to somebody else too.
Having gone through it, I could see how you could do it with somebody that you don't know, having gone through the process. Again, for me, it took me a while to find my therapist. And so I'm not letting her go unless they make me. And by they, I mean insurance.
So I think that EMDR is more accessible in the sense that you don't need somebody who knows you. Now, like with talk therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy, I get very upset when I've tried other therapists who in person, if they like, you know, I had one that called me Haley by accident, or one that couldn't remember what Crohn's disease was. And I thought, like, if I'm paying you this much money, you need to know my name, you need to know my disease, and you need to know everything that's ever happened to me, which maybe is unrealistic. But the thing about EMDR is that if it doesn't have to be somebody who knows you, then if your insurance has changed, or if there's an opportunity for a free EMDR service, you don't need to have to go to somebody who you've had a longstanding relationship with. And if you get access to someone who does EMDR, it will work, as opposed to maybe if you get access to someone who could do talk therapy, but your insurance only lets you have three sessions, you know, three free sessions type thing.
You make a good point, Hannah, because it does perhaps make this more accessible to some folks because it is a shorter duration. It is a time limited thing. You can think that you can get it done in 5 sessions. So perhaps that's something that's could be budgeted for more easily if this becomes something you think that could be really beneficial to you. So, I mean, it's not easy, but maybe a little more possible than just like talk therapy, unfortunately, can last years and years and years. Fortunately or unfortunately, I'm not sure what's the right word for that one.
Depends on who, if you're the one getting paid or the one paying for it.
Yeah. And therapy is hard. Therapy is hard to, you know, revisiting things is not easy and can feel really yucky sometimes when you're in the middle of it. And that's the nice word I'm going to use for that. So I'm curious, like when you are starting to sit down and you're like doing the tapping and seeing what comes up, is there like, this is the only way I can think of is there like a ranking system that happens of like this trauma comes up. And so, but no, that's not the real trauma. We're going to deal with this trauma instead. And like, how did you decide that? Like, so if something came up and you started talking about it, would you then yourself kind of say, nope, this isn't quite the right thing, but we're going to put that aside because it still is something? How does that work?
She would redirect me. So okay. If we would start it and I would, you know, she would tell me, you know, go picture that trigger and, or the, you know, that starting point, I guess is maybe what you call it, that traumatic event that's led us to all this. And then we do a few taps and then she says, what do you see? And also you do rate. She would ask me on a scale of 1 to 5, how disturbed are you? And sometimes I would be not disturbed at all. Just like, I'm not disturbed right now talking to you. And then sometimes I would feel super anxious. And I, when that trauma had been opened. And so when every maybe minute or so, when she would say, okay, what did you see? What were you thinking? How disturbed are you? At that point, she would write down all the things and decide, okay, but let's go back to this. I want you to close your eyes and tap and let's talk about and think about this. So she would redirect to go through a specific thing. And I think that was based on what her training and how, what she believed we needed to get taken care of before we moved on to the next thing that I was seeing.
Yes. Did you ever have to speed up or slow down your tapping?
Yes.
Yeah. I had to speed up and slow down my tapping depending on it. Yeah.
Why did she explain why?
I think it was dependent on how disturbed I was. Disturbed is the word that they use to, you know, how upset you are, how bothered you are by the memory. So, yeah.
So maybe it speeds up your processing a little bit to tap faster.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know. I'm going to point out, I'm saying this without any knowledge.
Something about the tapping and I also did the one with the eyes where there was something on the screen and my eyes would go back and forth and that one would speed up or slow down. Something about that ignites your subconscious. And I'm not a scientist, so I don't know how. I just know that it does.
And it is wild, people. It is wild. I just did tapping. I didn't do anything with the screen, which we could have, but the tapping worked like a charm for me. So
it has to do with like the fact that there's the meridians, right? Like, you know, your one side of your brain is attached to kind of one side of your body and it's not the same side. Right. And so to get the connections to go through your corpus callosum, which is like, you know, the big cord in the middle that attaches your brain together, in order to kind of get things flowing between there and to process it fully, you have to get your sides of your brain talking to each other again. And that's what you do. That's why you do the tapping and the eye moving, because it makes it basically connects your brain together in that middle part again.
You're so smart, Alicia.
Listen, go through the middle part is what I just said, Hannah. I don't think that counts.
You're very smart.
I like to think of it as updating my brain with new information. Like my brain was stuck with old information. It would not upload the new information. Right. It was like a software update.
Yeah.
Yes. I needed a little software update.
It's like my computer all the time because it hates me. It's like, Alicia, you have to shut it down every once in a while. Probably a lot like your trauma brains right now. No,
yes.
I agree with you. Like, it's just so weird. Even when Courtney was explaining it to us, I was like, I don't think this works.
You don't like, believe it. It doesn't feel like it's real. It feels like witchcraft.
It is. And I'm such a proponent of it. And I just want everybody to do it now.
Agree.
I've been trying to convince a lot of people. The other day, maybe Stacey Collins texted me and said, you know, do you remember when your physical therapist did ABCD and something similar just reminded me of it? And I couldn't remember. And I'm like, I think you might be thinking of somebody else. And then she was like, she reminded me and I realized that I had worked through that in EMDR, that I was so unbothered by that memory that I couldn't even remember that traumatic event that 6 or 7 months ago, I was so mad about that I was texting people about.
That's witchcraft. So cool.
It doesn't feel right. I guess I keep thinking to myself, like, I just don't understand how the traumas come out. And again, this sounds like really silly, but like, cause you know, what we're talking about, especially for some people, it's trauma that's buried real deep down inside and it's coming out like panic attacks or migraines or like physical symptoms that are happening or like IBS or like, you know, gastrointestinal issues for some folks, not our IBD folks typically. Mm-hmm. And so you're not aware of them necessarily. And yet somehow like you sit down and you do a little bit of tap, tap, tap and like things come up and it's just so, I just don't get it. Like, it feels like magic, but also like witchcraft. And I don't know, it's very strange.
It's so weird. So the first that I heard about EMDR was not in related to medical trauma. It was when I was a baby attorney and I would get so triggered by older male attorneys, even if they were the slightest bit of aggressive, or even if I didn't even rise to the level of aggression. it really triggered me. And my colleague was like, you know, maybe you should do some EMDR to figure out where this is coming from. And then all my medical stuff happened. And I thought, we're not working on how old men make me feel. We need to talk about the surgery. But it turned out that 13 years ago, an older male doctor didn't take me seriously when I had symptoms. And I went 2 years without being diagnosed. And that in my career, 13 years later, it was manifesting towards people who weren't doctors, who weren't diagnosing me, who just maybe don't take me seriously. But my subconscious felt like we were back in that doctor's office when I was a teenager, and they didn't take me seriously when I said I have symptoms.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And not necessarily something that, yeah, you would have necessarily put together on your own. And maybe your therapist would have, no, I mean, why would your therapist have caught that? Because it's not like you said to your therapist, oh, I remember when I was 13, I had some, you know, douchebag that didn't believe me. Like, everybody's had a douchebag that doesn't believe them. And so it's not necessarily something we bring up with our therapist, unless it just happened and you're talking to your therapist that day, then you're like, let me tell you about this douchebag, you know? So yeah, that is fascinating.
I can't wait to dive into something else. I've only done the one thing.
Do you know what it's going to be, Robin?
Oh, no, I don't know yet.
I've done a couple things. Like, we identified that I was going back to, you're not taking me seriously. And then also, I'm not feeling well. And then sometimes now when I'm in just regular talk therapy with her, she'll say, you know, okay, a medical thing happened. That sounds traumatic. Let's do some sessions. And we'll do like 15 minutes of EMDR and work through that trauma that maybe is a lowercase t. And it all goes back to the same issue, but it comes out in different ways. It's so weird.
I mean, honestly, mine came down to, I can't believe I'm actually talking about this on the show. For the big thing for me was at the end of it, what came out of it was me acknowledging that this diagnosis wasn't my fault. Even though I've talked about that for years, I've told hundreds of other people this. I've told hundreds of other people that it's not their fault. But for me, for myself, like getting sick again in 2018, there's nothing I could have done to prevent me from actually having Crohn's as opposed to having indeterminate colitis or ulcerative colitis. There's nothing I could have done. But then even the root of that underneath that was like me forgiving my little baby 25-year-old self who was originally diagnosed. Like, I'm going to start crying right now just thinking about that. So like, what other things? I have a really hard time like forgiving myself for stuff. Like, I'm really hard on myself about a lot of stuff that has nothing to do with IBD. So I feel like I could address probably a lot of that through this method.
Do you think that's an IBD thing though, that you're hard on yourself on things that are not related to IBD? Because I've been hard on myself
since I was in the womb. So, I mean,
I feel like sometimes I hold myself to an unreasonable standard because
100%
because I feel like you have Crohn's disease, and if you can't do this, then that means that your Crohn's is winning. And so even if I'm talking about working late or doing a workout or doing social plans and I'm not even having symptoms, my mind goes back to, if you can't do this, it's because of your IBD and you're letting your IBD win. That's why I was asking if you thought that they were connected, because I'm starting to think that it's all connected.
Honestly, it could be connected, but I have always had pretty high expectations for myself, and they 100% could be exacerbated because of IBD. I mean, this is probably a very accurate thing to say, actually. I'm right now living in a phase of, I'm feeling pretty good right now, and it feels precarious. And I want to like go out and live as much life as I possibly can. And that's really hard on everyone around me, because I can't just go out and live as much life as possible, because I have responsibilities and a job and, you know, all of that stuff. But, and I actually feel like EMDR helped me get here because it helped me, you know, like forgive myself a little bit, forgive 25-year-old me, forgive me from 6 years ago when my diagnosis changed, and thank you EMDR, but also like I feel better, but it also feels very precarious.
I feel the same way. I'm calling it my healthy girl era in honor of the Taylor Swift Eras Tour.
Because I just love that.
I feel healthier than I've ever remembered feeling. I just can't ever remember feeling this good and this healthy. And so I want to go to the Taylor Swift concert and buy spontaneous plane tickets. And just, you know, I just randomly went to the Houston Rodeo to go see some Machine Gun Kelly perform on a weeknight. You know, I would have never done stuff like that, even pre, you know, emergency surgery. I never felt that good. And I feel like I feel so good right now that I don't want it to end, but it does. It seems like too good to be true. But I have the same thing as you. I just have this, I want to go do things that I think I'm not going to be able to do 6 months from now. Like while I have the health, I'm going to use it.
Yes.
That makes sense. That feeling of like, I need to grab it while I have the opportunity makes sense. I think people that live with chronic illnesses that, like you said, hit sort of that healthy girl era, and, or, you know, I see other people too, that like, it's just, you know, you feel pressured to live as much as you possibly can, because you're right. You don't necessarily know that tomorrow isn't a given for you. Tomorrow's not a given for anybody, but it feels especially like it's not a given for folks that have struggled and have had medical conditions that have put them out of commission for a while. And so I think that that makes sense. It's just it's a little bit dangerous for some folks, because, you know, you end up maybe spending money you don't have, or like losing your job because you went to this Machine Gun Kelly concert in Houston. You know, luckily that didn't happen to you, but
or bought a plane ticket and just like said, I'll be back when I get back. Right. You know, I haven't done that yet, but it's on the list.
I can see you doing it though, Robin.
It's on the list. It is on the list. We get to come with you. It's on the list. The only thing that's stopping me right now is my job, that I get to travel for the next 7 out of 10 weeks for work. That is the only thing that's stopping me from just buying a plane ticket and being like, see you when I see ya.
I mean, I don't know, going back to like everything kind of revolves somewhat around this thing. I do think that makes sense. I mean, we've talked to some of the like therapists that we've talked to, or researchers that we've talked to, talk about all the opportunities for trauma that happen when you have a chronic illness, all the times you are in a hospital with people who don't know you, or where things are being done to you, or things are happening. I think that makes sense, that becomes something that like, it's not just a one-time trauma, it's like an ongoing trauma. And so it's a lot of little T's. And then typically there's a big T in there too, but sometimes all those little T's also build up to a big T, where you're like, I don't want to go to the hospital. I'm scared of the hospital because this is where all sorts of negative things happen to me, kind of thing. Or I don't want to see that person because I associate them with really negative things too. So I think it makes sense to me that sometimes there's things that you're talking about that all of a sudden kind of come up, and that you can do a little jazz session to get rid of them, you know, like.
Yeah. I feel like that's why EMDR is so beneficial to people with chronic illnesses. Because, you know, I think it's really hard not to normalize things when it's chronic, because, okay, I'm nauseous today, but I'm probably going to be nauseous tomorrow, and I'm probably going to be nauseous next week. So I can't really talk myself out of, you know, just get through the 30 minutes of nausea and then you'll be fine. And there's just so much that we normalize, like the crazy things that happen in the hospital, the things when you show up to the ER, the show you have to put on to get the ER to take you seriously. Getting a doctor appointment, the insurance. I mean, I could just go on and on about all the different aspects of having a chronic illness that are traumatic, but I only recognize that they're traumatic because I did EMDR and somebody validated, hey, that's a trauma that we need to work through. Because really, when all those things happen, I just have to suck it up and do it, or go back to work the next day, or, you know, drive myself home. I don't get to live in the trauma or feel the trauma because it's happened so often with chronic illness.
Yeah. It almost doesn't feel like trauma anymore. It just feels like what it's like to have to navigate the medical system as a woman with chronic illness, right. You know, like we read a book for book club at work that was crap. I've mentioned it on the show before. I'll throw it in the show notes, but basically it's a woman who was talking about, like, it took her 7 years to get diagnosed with, I think like lupus. Right. And then she did a bunch of research on women and how women are sort of treated within the healthcare system. And she talked about, like, especially women going into the ER, and about how it takes longer for them to get pain medicine. It takes longer for them to get an actual like room, and how basically women have to put on enough of a show to show that they actually do have something going on, that like something truly wrong with them. Like, you can't be too stoic, otherwise they don't believe that you're anything other than a drug seeker, but you can't be too crying too much, because then they think you're just hysterical, and then you're just like, you know, it's just anxiety. And so it's like, you kind of hit the right balance of like, upset, but not too upset, you know? And like, it's just like, what a stupid game to play. And unfortunately for people that have had to go to the emergency room, like you start to understand the game that you have to play in order to get served. It's really messed up.
Yeah, I just eventually learned exactly what I needed to say and what show I needed to put on to get what I wanted, which was medical attention ASAP.
Yeah. Training for medical students. Maybe they need some trauma therapy too. They're probably relatively traumatized by stupid medical school. And also it's not very easy for people, but not the same. So now that you've done this and you've realized it works really, really well for you, do people ask you about this? Like, are you openly talking about this? Like, so when people are asking you about it, what are you telling them about it?
I'm telling them that it's magic, but now I'm going to start calling it witchcraft now that Robin called it witchcraft, because I like that better. I'm pretty open about it, but I've been very open about all the surgeries I had and all the complications I had. And I haven't talked as much about having panic attacks, but I'm pretty sure that anybody who's spent 5 minutes with me knows that I have anxiety. So I'm not embarrassed about to say that I have anxiety or to say that I did EMDR. What's usually happened is somebody's opened up to me and I said, you know, you would really benefit from EMDR. This is how it worked for me, and what you're describing sounds like it would work for you. I talk about it more in that context. I don't think I ever posted on social media like, hey, I'm doing EMDR for medical trauma. It was more of other people brought it up.
I waited until this episode to talk about it.
I feel so honored.
I haven't really shared it with anybody yet, but because I wanted to talk about it on the show first. But I definitely will share more openly about it now, because I feel like it's very, very useful and helpful, and just another tool that we can use to help us, you know, try to live, you know, just try to live this life with chronic illness and, you know, just get through, just get through, thrive, not survive.
I think for some people also, the fact that it works so quickly is very results oriented. So for people, frankly, so like quickly. Overachievers like you guys, because you're both very driven, successful women, I could see how this would be really appealing, because you're like, I want to see results. And like, you get to see results, because talk therapy, as much as it's wonderful to have this relationship and to do talk therapy, it's not fast.
No.
And it feels like you're like, God, why am I going again? You know, like, when is this ever going to be something I feel like I've dealt with? You know, but this is like, you see the result, it happens much quicker. So it makes you feel successful. Frankly, I mean, there's a little bit of like, okay, this works for me.
Yes, that is true.
I actually didn't know it was going to be this quick. I mean, when she said, I think you need to do EMDR, I thought, I'll do whatever you say, because what's happening now is not, I can't live this way. It was more about a desperation. I actually didn't know that it was going to be so quick and that I would see results that quickly.
I didn't know it was going to be that quick either, but I remember Courtney saying sometimes it works for people, sometimes it doesn't. And I didn't remember her saying like, if it worked in a couple of sessions or 10 sessions or, you know, that. But my therapist did say, after we had like started the process, for me, because she knows how I am, like, don't expect this to work all at one time. But then when she saw me making some headway, she's like, you know, it's okay if this, like, it can work in just a couple of sessions. Like, she didn't want me to think that I had to like belabor it either, like drag it out and make it like into this thing that took 10 sessions. She's like, you can see results quickly too. So, and then afterwards, she's like, some people see results as soon as one session. Like some people can, I was about to say master it, but that's not it. The level of disturbance can be alleviated, you know, from whatever the highest level is down to nothing in just in one session, depending on what it is. So people can see results like immediately.
That's what Courtney said in her episode as well. But she did, I mean, I think it's also good that your therapists are like not setting expectations.
Yeah.
Because it's cool if it's great, if it happens in a couple, but yeah, if it takes more, you don't want to feel like it's not working for you. And so I think it's good to kind of hit that balance.
That's what I was going to ask, is I wonder, or do you know if there's patterns with people it doesn't work for? Is it that they...
That was going to be my question. If your therapist had ever said anything to you guys is like, yeah, do you know who it doesn't work for?
No, but I want to know now.
My therapist never said it wasn't going to work, actually. No. This is the first time that I've... Yeah, this is the first time that I've heard that it doesn't work for some people. But I also was just like so desperate to stop having panic attacks. So I was going to do anything. But I mean, I never thought it wasn't going to, I guess I never knew the kind of like magic and witchcraft that would happen, but I just assumed it was going
to
work.
I think that people who are not, I mean, because you have to like go into that kind of trance-like state to set up your safe space and to, you know, create, I don't know, I call it my lockbox of where I put, you know, the trauma, right? Where I store that trauma away. And so you have to be open enough to be able to create that space and to lock that trauma away. And so I feel like if you're not someone who can do that, then it probably wouldn't work for you initially until you could get to that point where you could do that.
So my sister-in-law and I got into a really interesting discussion, and I promise this will all relate, the other day about kind of how people envision the world and like their work. Because so we got talking about basically how like there was somebody that they were like had put together this whole thing to sort of visualize what they were thinking because it's basically what they needed. And so as we were sort of talking about this, she's like, she said, she reminds me a little bit of my friend Joanna, who is an artist. And it was one of these things where she literally didn't think in necessarily a very linear way. She was a very visual processing person. So in her mind, she saw the picture, a visual representation of whatever it was in her brain. And so when she was interacting or talking, she sort of interacted in a way that was interacting with this picture, right? And my sister-in-law was saying that she is a very word-based person, like a very like language person. And so she's like, I think in sentences, essentially, like I think in words. And so my way of thinking is very linear. And she's like, I don't have that thing in my brain where I can picture something. Like if you tell her you need to go, you know, turn left over here, go west, whatever. She's like, I don't picture a map in my brain that doesn't make sense to me. Like, so she's not a visual person. So I wonder, like somebody like her would really struggle with the, like having to picture a safe space. Like, I don't think she can do that. Having to picture a box you put something in, I don't think she can do that necessarily. So I wonder if that's the type of person that maybe, because it's, I think it's on a spectrum. There's some people like her that really think very, very like word-based, and people like her friend who was this, you know, sculptor who could picture, do everything in sort of pictures. I think we're all kind of somewhere in the middle, but if you're maybe on one side, it's like too difficult for you because you can't make that vision.
That makes sense, because you also have to picture each traumatic event. So we're not just picturing your safe space, but you're picturing, you know, that time on the couch where you were laying there and I felt like I was dying, and because I was going septic and I felt like I was dying and nobody was taking me to the hospital. You have to keep picturing, you keep going back to that point. And then also you kind of fabricate the future because, or at least for me, because I was going to have surgery again, I had to fabricate, okay, what is this going to look like? And how, where am I going to be? How am I going to overcome it? How am I going to feel? So it does take a lot, maybe imagination. I don't know if it's quite imagination, but definitely all parts of it are visual.
That's super interesting though, what you just said about how you were not necessarily processing something that happened to you. You were processing something that would happen to you. That is really fascinating that it can be used for that as well.
That's the thing that I think is unique about chronic illness. And I don't think that EMDR was originally created for that purpose. I think it was for, you know, maybe you're a survivor of sexual violence and now you need to overcome that trauma. The thing about chronic illness for people with chronic illnesses is that we're not overcoming a traumatic situation. We're just processing one because another one is likely going to happen. And that's not us being negative. That's us being realistic. And so it is, I think, different the way that somebody with chronic illness would do EMDR versus somebody who had experienced another type of traumatic event.
So you're talking more openly about it. You've mentioned that you've talked to people about it, but I'm curious, like when people say, okay, what are the pros and cons? What are your pros and cons list that you tell people? Cause like, I know I love a good recommendation. Awesome. But for something like this, I'd be like, I want to know a little bit more about what I'm getting into. So how was it great? And how was it a con? Like pros and cons?
Pros are, I mean, the results can be very fast. Like you can feel a difference, not just see a difference. Like you can feel a difference. You experience a difference in your brain. The con for me was like reliving that moment, like really reliving that moment multiple times over and over again. And so depending on, you know, you have to really be able to compartmentalize and put that trauma away at the end of the session, but you also have to be willing to like revisit that memory over and over again to reprocess it. So that was for me.
Yeah. For me, the pro is the results and the self-awareness that came from it. The cons would be the cost, just because it is really expensive and it's not covered by insurance, or at least for me, it wasn't covered by insurance. So I had to pay out of pocket for it. And it's not the type of thing, like I said, you could do from your car in the parking lot. So then based on your work situation, it can affect work. So I don't think that it's as, the con is it's not as accessible as it could be. And also, to Robin's point, you're purposely disturbing yourself. I mean, I think that the therapist is taking you to that dark place so you can work through it, but you have to get there, and that sucks to feel like that. And you're kind of, you're making yourself feel that way to work through it, but you know what's going to happen. You know when you go to that session that you're going to get very disturbed, which is the word they use, but I've never heard disturbed used.
I know. That's disturbing. The fact that they use the word disturbed, she's like, how disturbed are you? I'm like, what are you talking about? Please define disturbed for me.
Yeah, but then you unlock that trauma and I'm like, oh no, I am just, this is very disturbing.
It is very disturbing. I would say Hannah's cons are very, very valid. I'm very fortunate. I work remote, so I don't have to worry about like I could do my virtual therapy in my house. So I don't have to worry about like having to go to a job afterwards. So that wasn't a concern for me.
Neither of you have children in your home right now. And so That's the other thing is that you can take time to not be as functional as perhaps some people need to be. If you need that time to decompress and
correct,
you know, get away. So yes, that does unfortunately make it maybe more difficult for some people because it does sound really disturbing to go through this. But and all every time you guys say disturbed, there's a metal band called Disturbed. And like now I can't stop thinking about that for so everyone. I'm going to put a Disturbed album in the show notes too for you. But I don't
you'd
think
be interested to know that Marie was in here with me for two of my sessions. Marie is my dog, Marie Laveau. And like she knew when I was getting disturbed because she came and put her head on my lap, or she brought me not just toys, because when she gets tired of me being on calls, she'll bring me like a ball, but she brought me like her fluffiest stuffed animal, put it in my lap, put her head in my lap. It was like licking my face whenever I was getting really upset. She started licking my face and my therapist like, oh, she was like looking out for me. So
that's so sweet.
It was so sweet. Yeah.
Oh, so sweet.
Well, guys, I really, really appreciate you being so open and talking about this. I know it's not easy because again, we're talking about content that is trauma with a big T, but I think this is really going to be valuable for people to hear about your experiences so that if this is something they're exploring, that they feel a little better prepared. I know if this was something I was thinking about, I would have wanted to hear what you guys had to say. So I know kind of what to expect and how this may be helpful for me. So but again, I know it's hard. So I really appreciate you both being so, so honest and open about this. So thank you guys for sharing. Thank you to our guests for joining us and cheers, guys.
Cheers. Thanks, Hannah. Cheers.
Thanks for having me.
If you liked this episode, please rate, review, subscribe, and even better, share it with your friends. Cheers.